that you think is kind of substantive with these people, and we'll begin to take some calls as well.
But sure. Well, you
in
know,
the project, I know things happen to you when you get involved in a project.
Yeah, but one thing leads to another. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you one I think you might enjoy. As you know, Reggie, as you have and as I have, we've interviewed some very properly impressive people. We've also interviewed some people who had big reputations who were nothing.
Granted. I continue to do that.
Yes. Well, you know, you meet more nothing these days than the people of substance, but right. This is our lot in life, my friend. Mm-hmm. And I have never, having been in Muhammad Ali's presence, and by the way, he's a very funny guy.
Oh, absolutely.
And he used me to a fare thee well for that humor, and I have every bit of it on tape. Coretta Scott King, who spoke with me of God in a train station, as you heard the whistling of the trains coming forward, and the ch-ch-ch-ch as they drove away, a very eerie, surprisingly profound interview. But never have I had such a ring of lights around my heart as when I interviewed Adam Clayton Powell III very recently. Thought of you, because I know you know that. You know that I know that Adam Clayton Powell Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the kicker was Adam Clayton Powell III is not only his father's son, but he is the son of my hero, Hazel Scott.
Marvelous Hazel Scott.
So I got to go literally in one conversation from him describing walking down the Champs-Élysées with his mother and Quincy Jones, who was between bands, being back at the apartment, to walking down Lexington Avenue with his father holding one hand and his mother, Hazel Scott, holding the other. This was the congressman's Sunday stroll, where he greeted everyone, "Keep the faith, baby, and spread it gently." Mm-hmm. And I was just in heaven. And I don't know if I live to be 1,000, if I'll ever have that kind of experience with an interview.
Yeah, there are individuals who are literally transcendent, and it's usually the ones who are self-effacing, who in fact, despite the fact that they have this aura, don't flaunt it so much. And you know, there are a lot of things said about the elder Powell, but his radiance. I did have the occasion to meet him on occasion. In fact,
really?
I was primarily there just kind of, yeah, listening.
Oh, you're so lucky.
Well, you know, I mentioned Claude earlier. Claude Lewis, known to all of these individuals. Because of him, I also had the chance to speak with the young and vibrant Malik El-Shabazz, known as Malcolm X.
Cool.
About whom Claude wrote. But in the one-on-ones, or in the private moments, you can see that these individuals have accepted their place in life, that outside in the greater purview, there'll be those who have both perceptions and or understandings of their reality. And they simply decide to do what they do, despite everything else. You know, Adam Powell was relentless in his conscientiousness and didn't buckle, didn't bow. And of course, now some of the things that he was involved in are child's play compared to what some of his successors have done. But he, you know, whether it was Bimini or in D.C. or in New York, where he held sway.
Where, by the way, when he gets to Congress, they're still using the N-word on the floor like it's cool.
Exactly. Certainly the
but he took care of that, too.
Including the Southern Democrats.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
He was lectured about how he won't be dining in the dining room.
Right.
And then he showed them where he's going to be dining.
Right. Yeah. Not a good idea to tell Adam Clayton Powell no.
No. Silly.
He was defiant. But he was...
And Rankin, when he chased Rankin all around the chamber, because Rankin said when he heard he got elected that he'd never sit next to him.
Yeah.
So he sat next to him all day long.
People hadn't heard that story probably, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't but there, but man, I'd have given my eye teeth. Just like I was so glad I was there the day you had Pendleton for lunch.
another name that has sort of melted into anonymity.
Yeah, Clarence, what a lucky guy.
Well, you tell us about who Clarence Pendleton
and was. You know, in a way, he epitomizes what you were saying is so wrong with the Bush administration. He was like the microclass in what was to come. The Reagan administration set the stage for America's embrace of mediocrity. And in that stage setting, we had many characters. James Watt comes to mind, a man who said that trees caused pollution, I believe.
Yeah.
Whoever the hell was in charge of nutrition who said that ketchup was a vegetable. This also happened on the Reagan watch.
Yeah, Reagan repeated it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Then,
so they could cut back in school lunches.
To add to this cast of stooges, I mean individuals or what have you, I always think of Mo, Larry, and Curly and Shemp. But the reality is, was Clarence Pendleton, who was in charge. Again, we always put the fox in charge of the hen house. He was over there, was it EEOC?
Yeah, he was.
Well, what a travesty. We put a guy.
Winner of the Golden Handkerchief Hit Award for 1985.
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, this man was, look, he couldn't have been whiter, except he didn't appear it.
Equal opportunity.
He was very equal opportunity, and you did a thing. And the guy was destroying equal opportunity.
Yeah.
He was taking it apart bolt by bolt, girder by girder, rafter by rafter, as we in the real media sat and were forced to merely report it. There didn't seem to be anything to stop the juggernaut. And I'm never going to forgive Tip O'Neill, frankly, who allowed all of that Reagan flood and madness to sort of take hold. There was a moment. There's always a moment, Reg, you already know this, but there's always a moment where you can fight and win. But after they get entrenched, you can't. So Clarence Pendleton is just destroying equal opportunity. And
the local black journalist, the...
Yeah, so he comes to Philadelphia. What a fool. I don't know what he was thinking when he even accepted the invitation to go to the breakfast. And he met Reggie Bryant that day. And Reggie Bryant, I'll never forget this, because I wanted to stand up and cheer, but you couldn't. It was like a formal breakfast. And I'm already the wrong, you know.
Yeah.
So I got to really behave.
Who is this white woman? What is
how'd she get in here? So I really got to behave. So he says, what have they promised you? And Reggie starts ticking off what this man has done to destroy what the Great Society built up, to destroy what Rosa Parks had worked for, to destroy what the Civil Rights Act of 1964 had worked for, and he ticked them off.
Civil Rights Commission, he's the chairman of, handpicked. And you have to understand that this man was, at best, obsequious, but arrogant, because he did have the stamp of approval from the Republicans, and came in almost as if you would have been privileged to touch the hem of his garment.
Oh, God, yeah.
And some of my colleagues and the Philadelphia Black journalists were professionally neutral, because when it's describing is you can only take so much. And he'd been in court, and he began this insulting presentation, at which time I had to take umbrage and take exception to what he was saying, because he was the worst thing that could have possibly have happened to civil rights and equal opportunity in the world. This man was Capital Tom.
Mm.
And the things that came out of his mouth officially were so offensive as to have been amusing. It was almost like a stand-up comedy act, except you've noticed that people were in rapt, polite attention until the microphone in the middle of the floor, was at the cornucopia, allowed me to ask a few questions and make some comments. And he sputtered and stuttered. The upshot of the story is that ultimately he fell into a kind of ignominious kind of obscurity, even with them. Remember, they eventually sent him off after his term to... think to California someplace.
Right? No, I think you were right, because you were saying, what job did they promise you? And they gave him some big job.
Yeah, I think it was on the West Coast.
But then he couldn't cash in on it.
Mm-hmm. But that was the payoff. You do what you do, you follow it. And he, of course, he didn't answer the question as if it was an absurd kind of circumstance. Same thing with his successors. It was a moment that...
it was a moment,
that
all
Lynn
right.
has memorialized her. She has the...
Totally. I
she has
that,
the ticket.
Yes.
For, from the cornucopia.
I'm going to write about it someday, Reggie.
The newsmaker. Well, yes. Well,
yeah, he was a newsmaker, all right, but you were better.
Treat me kindly.
Always. Come on.
What can I tell you? Her guest is Lynn Alexander. The era we're talking about, the 80s, 1985 was this event, but throughout the period of time from the 60s through the 70s to the 80s were tumultuous. And Philadelphia always had a role.
Bigger than we knew,
oh,
I think.
Cecil Moore and others.
You know what Maddie Humphrey used to tell me?
Maddie.
Look up the microscope.
Yeah.
like we were some little specimen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another name from that time. Relentless people who, in many cases, expired before they saw the fruits. Leon Higginbotham. I mean, there were some absolute giants who fought against it. I mentioned Higginbotham because of his impassioned full-page letter that decried the Clarence Thomas nomination, how totally offensive it would be.
He took a huge stand on that.
It's like entering a squirrel in the Kentucky Derby, you know, just absolutely out of place.
I have a picture you would love. It one picture. Higginbotham, Adam Clayton Powell, the congressman, and George Woods and Bob Klein.
The real Rushmore. The real Rushmore. She mentions cursorily Bob Klein, but he made it possible for a lot of people to accomplish a number of things. Everything from underground radio and my father's son.
Oh, Reggie, you're killing me. You know that's my uncle, right?
Yes, I do know. I know. But another time, when it wasn't just the music, but also it was the opportunity for people to make commentary.
Yeah, album cuts, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
18-minute songs.
Yeah. Because
Osi Basa.
How about that?
How about that? How about the Meters, great, the long cuts?
The brilliant group, the Meters. And Osi from, and I still have some of that stuff, you know that.
Hell yeah. Listen, I love the Barquets.
And both the Meters and the Barquets, tragically, you know,
met
their end. But it was said of the Meters, they could go into a studio at any time, the day or night, and just come out with some incredible, gorgeous music. And the Barquets, and another time, the New Orleans sound and the Southern music, which had social relevance. And I have some stuff from Stax.
I was going to say Memphis Stax Volt.
Yeah, I may do a little bit.
Delighted.
We have a minute to. I don't know what we're going to come back with. We'll see. We must pause. And I want to provide an opportunity if you have a question or comment for Win Alexander. 215-634-8065. That would make you right there to have a comment. And we will be black after this.
The Empowerment Zone in conjunction with PECO Energy, State Senator Anthony H. Williams, Comcast, the Public Utility Commission, and David Auto Group is acknowledging February as Black History Month by giving a free Knowledge is Power seminar at the African American History Museum located at 701 Arch Street in Philadelphia. February 28th from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Join us when the Empowerment Zone will broadcast live on 900 a.m. WURD.
Someone's identity is stolen every 3 seconds, and it can take you up to 600 hours to fix. That's why you need LifeLock now. We're so confident in our industry-leading proactive identity theft protection, we guarantee that if we don't stop it, we'll fix it at our expense, up to $1 million. Call 1-800-610-3419 right now and get LifeLock absolutely free for 30 days. That's 1-800-610-3419. Again, 1-800-610-3419.
Every Thursday that the Philadelphia City Council is in session, lawyers from Booth & Tucker LLP, Philadelphia's largest African-American law firm, will provide commentary and analysis of the council's proceedings. Tune in Thursday at 9:30 a.m. and again immediately following the end of council's proceedings as lawyers from Booth & Tucker LLP provide insight into how City Council decisions affect you. Mondays through Thursdays, listen to The Al B Show, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., and Fridays from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., exclusively on 900 a.m. WURD.
Colin Powell, if he were to be a vice presidential candidate, I think a lot of Republicans, negating what would we lose on the Democratic side, we would gain on the Republican side. I think there would be tremendous support looking 4 to 8 years ahead to saying that you could unify our government by picking someone similar to Colin Powell. Just my opinion.
No, I agree with that. I just don't know if it would actually be done, but I agree.
Check out The Al B Show only on 900 AM WURD or online at www.900amwurd.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can hear 900 AM WURD in crisp, clear, digital quality sound. Visit www.900amwurd.com. WURD, your information station. Committed to solutions.
Did somebody say bar case?
Mm-hmm.
Soul finger.
Perfect.
Win Alexander is your guest. A little step back in the past. As you mentioned, of course, the guy with the goods, Bob Klein. It was an era of people who, in fact, went about doing what they did without the necessity to get a lot of acclaim notoriety. It was the stuff that was happening beneath the surface, because you had to offset the Rizzo mentality and the others that were deleterious to what was going on in this place, because Philadelphia was in many ways backward.
Yeah.
And this alleged city of brotherly love was not then, and in my view is not now, even close to that kind of mutual altruism. It's been a city that was polarized.
Yes.
But one thing that tended to bring them together that was an ameliorating factor was the music.
No question.
And the commentary.
I think the DAS really was a unifying force.
Oh, yeah.
It was multicultural, multiracial, and very positive in all of it. You know, everybody was beautiful.
There's a name I have to mention.
Say it.
Mitch Gilbert.
All right.
Because there are people, as recently as a year ago, when somebody asked me whatever happened to Mitch, they were not aware of his death. But during the period of time, one of the other elements that was a part of people's listening day,
mm-hmm,
was his commentaries.
Yes.
And whether they were dealing with the Maharashi or whatever the case may be.
Well, or political or consumerism.
But it was the only place on the dial, because other than that you had WIBG and
yeah,
High Lit and the ubiquitous and perennial questionable Jerry Blaffin and whatever.
Depending on who you was having lunch with.
But there you had the ethos and the ethnicity of an experience that was more relevant. It was just important. And I'm doing more talking than I should, because as I said, you have gone to great lengths and put this project together.
You know who I thought you were going to say in terms of...
Well, maybe I was.
Amazing. I think I might have got out of your head. John Bandy, Lord Fauntleroy.
Oh, how can I forget? Lord. The individual who was
do you know
the
who
penultimate.
Did? Yes. Walt Palmer. I spoke with him on tape a little while ago, and he did a surprisingly good impersonation of John Bandy. Mm-hmm. I was shocked. I should have got it. I should have said, could you do more?
One for the ages.
Oh, my God.
Who had his physical presence was just as imposing as his accent, which he developed.
This man was possibly the most charming man I shall ever meet.
Elegant.
Truly.
I remember seeing John Bandy one day on Walnut Street. This was before it has become what it is now. And he was striding along as he did. He had this long stride. His posture was of course, erect. And he was going from store to store as the rolls at about 8 miles an hour drifted down Walnut. And he would go into a store and make a purchase. He would come out and the driver would take it and put it in the mat.
Classic.
And he'd continue to walk from Rittenhouse Square down to about 16th. And then with a flourish, you know, and to make sure that he was still immaculate and that his creases were sharp enough to slice onions with, he would doff his derby.
That's or
his
right.
Homburg.
Yep.
And get in the car and
yep,
head back to the, what was referred to then as the main line.
Quite. Well, you know,
but a classy individual.
He was quite something before he married Roberta Pugh, and certainly he knew exactly what to do there.
Well, we wondered about some of his stories about the Boer War and his war injuries and so forth, and we weren't always sure which was hyperbole.
He told me he was from Madagascar. What are you talking about?
You see, it depended on.
But I will tell you one thing. He was at the seashore for the weekend with us in Longport. And in those days, Longport didn't have too many Jews, let alone black people.
To say the least.
So there we all were in the same house. And I was, I think, 7 years old. And whenever there were guests in the house, we were very excited. There were four of us then, even though Leif was very, very little. So there were three of us ambulating.
Mm.
And I just couldn't wait to go and wake John up to get the day started. I must tell you, too, this guy was amazing with young people. Mm-hmm. He was spellbinding. And I mean, he was magic. He was like everything you've ever seen in an enchanted movie. So I run in the morning, and one thing leads to another. And I say to him, but John, well, how come you are that color and I'm this color? And he looked at me and he said, really only one reason, in that fabulous accent of his, pigment. And he said, do you know what pigment is? And I knew that pigment had been on my mother's egg temper or oil paintings. Mm. I said, it's about the painting. He said, yes, color. That's the only difference. Pigment. And I remembered that for the rest of my life. It's the only difference. Yeah. And then he said, no difference at all.
And John was quite a storyteller as well.
He was the best.
We have a caller who joins us from South Philadelphia. Phone number 215-634-8065. This is Sonny. Good afternoon, Sonny.
Thank you, Reggie. How you doing?
I'm well, sir.
And to your guests.
And your guests.
Well, I'm going to try something close. Top in the morning, how do you do? This is Lloyd Funky Roy Brandy coming to you, bringing sounds out of the ground in your part of the town.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Stuck with you all this time, huh?
Huh?
It stuck with you all of this time.
Ham Cannonball.
Oh, yeah, Cannonball.
Yeah, Cannonball was good, sharp. And Reggie, the man did wear a nice hummingbird.
Yes, Lord.
And look here.
He's always clean.
He had a charcoal brown hummingbird, and you know, he had that...
Hummingbird,
yeah. Okay. We said hummingbird.
Yeah, that...
Hummingbird.
I think that's
hummingbird.
A small creature.
But yeah. And he had like a camel hair, real light coffee color. He looked like he stepped out of a magazine.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah,
he
was clean.
Class act.
Yes, he was. And he had it going. Back in the day, those black disc jockey and everything, they had it. Where is that? And I'm just saying my point of view. The whites had copy.
Yeah.
Gita with the heater?
Yeah.
He tried to do a Jocko.
He admits it.
You know what I mean? But, you know.
He'd have to.
Yeah, but it was good. It was good on the dark side.
No question. Let me say, too, yeah. As fabulous as Bandy was on the air, mm-hmm. I have a lot of his memos when he became assistant GM at DAS.
Well,
this guy's radio through and through.
Mm.
He was extremely eloquent, thorough, and he was grappling with a lot of tough issues. He was there through 67, possibly into 68.
Right.
Those were some tough times.
They were, in
right.
fact.
I met him. I was working at a place they call at that time at Broad and Pine. They call it Flash's Auditorium. They call it the Young Man and Jewish Association. I met him and Joe Lewis.
Wow.
At that time, Peps was right down the street, and took him up on the elevator, you know what I mean? And, hey, it was a pleasure to meet Joe. Yeah, that was my pleasure.
The champ.
Yeah.
Yeah, shake hands with Joe. He had his wife there, you know, with her little fur on and everything. After that, they went down to Peps. It was great.
You're telling your age, you know that, bro.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Not a thing.
Hey, I wanted to keep on coming on. Have a good one, Reg.
Thank you, Sonny.
Be your guest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hesitate. We pause. We come back. We'll spend a few more minutes with Owen Alexander and perhaps with your calls. This is the relentless, the indefatigable pursuit of truth. I'm Reggie Bryant. You're not.
I'm a midnight milk drinker. I have to be when my heartburn hits. When it does, I just grab a carton and chug it.
Heartburn isn't funny. That's why Zantac is serious. Just one pill relieves your toughest heartburn all day or all night. So the suffering stops and life starts. Heartburn? Attack it. Zantac. Use as directed.
You're listening to 900 AM WURD Philadelphia, a Lavosse Communications station.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven.
it still works. Go ahead, Mavis. That was Popsicle and Mavis. Respect yourself. Talk about those things that became fodder for television all the way back then. Air pollution, silly president, disrespecting women, misogyny, disrespect by both the clergy and the congregations. Respect yourself. Classic. Pop Staples. With Alexander, your guest, we go back to the telephone. We speak with Dave from Northern Liberties. Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bryant and Sandra.
Hi.
Alexander, I'm sorry.
Hi.
Yeah, Lynn Alexander. Yeah.
When?
In the old days, was it John Bandy, the tall fellow, that he had like a white spot of, a gray spot in the front of his head? He
yes.
was very tall.
Mm-hmm. Very dignified.
Amazing.
Regal carriage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was Mama's honeydew melon boy. Don't want Leroy. Prepared to bring musical sounds out of the ground bound down to your part of the town to preclude the probability of your morale coming down.
Love it.
Dave.
Yeah, also.
Fascinating how it sticks with you, isn't it?
That's right. He used to come on, and he used to have, on Saturday, was Ray Day. You say Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Ray Day. And I know that was the time I had to get all my chores done and so I could listen to Ray Day.
Okay.
That was the days of Downbeat Magazine.
Mm.
Oh, man. And the only one to me that drew more force was George Woods, only because George was a more visible person than John Bandy was. John Bandy had the personality.
Well, they were very different. But,
they were very different.
But essential to our growth and development, and we are blessed to have had them both.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
And a few others.
Absolutely.
That's all I had to say, but thanks so much.
I thank you for the call, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My good friend out of Lindenwall, Brother Najee.
Peace, Ed.
And to you, sir.
How you doing?
All right.
Yeah, I have some fond memories of John Bandy, too. When I was a young man at Wallen Oaks at 19th and Chestnut, which is now, I think, Adobe's restaurant now. But I was the first black optician they hired down there. And the only other black they had was a gentleman named Mr. Perry, who was the custodian. What brings you here, my young fella? I said, well, I work here, Mr. Bandy. He said, oh, you know, I'm really friendly. And we were talking. He said, well, how did you get this job? I said, well, make a long story short. The late Honorable Judge Pace Alexander owned the building. And he had told me, he came in one day and he said, I'm glad to see you here, son. I said, thank you. He said, you know who I am? I said, certainly do. You know, I told him. He said, you know what? He said, I approached the owners of this establishment and told them if he didn't see a black professional in that store soon, he would pull at least. And lo and behold, I was hired by the school board right after that incident, you know. And John Bandy and I was cracking jokes about the old days, you know, and Larry Daly's and Georgie Woods and Jocko's and everything. And I became his go-to man when he came there in the store. And I highly respected that brother because he told me how he got to where he was and how he dealt with what he had to deal with. So, I mean, the times we talk about people that are in the past and see where it brought us to now, today, you know, I see a steady understanding of what it takes to be where you are, you know, and appreciation of that.
Yes.
But that's one of my stories about John Bandy. I just wanted to throw that out there.
I thank you so much, sir. All of those things are little pearls of memory, and I appreciate it very much.
He brought up another pearl, Raymond Pace Alexander.
Absolutely. Another giant.
Unbelievable. I met him. I was a baby. Well, I was like 7. And I met he and Sadie Tanner Alexander at an opera. It's perfect. Perfect setting.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest thrills of my life was when I was working for Chief Justice Nix, somebody, a big name whose name I can't remember, called in and said, I was put on the phone because the chief couldn't come to the phone just yet, so I was doing the professional stall. And the person said, I don't want to, it might have been John Hope Franklin. It was like a historian who knew the congressman.
Mm-hmm.
And first he said, you must be a Lincoln girl. And I said, sadly, I did not go to Lincoln. But it is a regret that I've harbored to this day. Oh, okay. And then he said, Alexander, you wouldn't be related to Raymond Pace, Alexander. I said, that is the biggest compliment anyone will ever pay me. But no, I am not.
At least not directly. Who knows?
You never know.
You never know. And back to the phone. Who, Mac, joins us next, I believe. What are we doing here? Oh, we have to do some trafic. This is an institution that was not necessarily, it was in its infant stages. The time that we're talking about, individuals who would come on and appraise us as what was going on with regard to the traffic. This was, and even Paul Perillo was just a pup. But he joins us full grown today to talk about what's going on out there, Paul.
Yes, but I was there when they transcribed the traffic under those stone tablets.
Right. Exactly. There's a chariot broken down on the Appian Way.
Exactly. You know, funny as it is, not much has changed in all these years, that's for sure.
Right.
We still have delays out there, Reggie, on the westbound side of the Schuylkill at Spring Garden Street, and then it's slow glide to the curve. No problems on the eastbound side of the Schuylkill. Taking a look at the westbound side of the Vine, stacking from the parkway out to the Schuylkill, I-95 northbound delays in the area of Girard Avenue. Southbound 95, no reported problems. Traffic brought to you by Kaopectate. Don't let diarrhea stop you. Kaopectate stops diarrhea fast and has two key electrolytes, potassium and sodium, to help you recover fast. Stop diarrhea fast with Kaopectate. Taking a look at the forecast for today, well, cloudy skies are going to persist right on through the afternoon, and that will mean we will see some rain tonight, rain in the early hours, and then chance for snow flurries after midnight, breezy with a low of 34. Right now, cloudy skies, 50 degrees, and the weather is brought to you by the Chevy's President Day event, announcing Chevy President's Day sale, upholding your right to save serious cash on many 08s. Hurry to your Chevy dealer. Offer ends soon. Visit Chevy.com for details. Take delivery by February 29th. That's Metro Traffic and Weather. I'm Paul Perillo for 900 AM WURD. Information station committed to solutions.
All right, thank you, Paul.
You got it.
Okay. We continue, and let us go to the phone, and Brother Mac joins us.
Yes, Wynn
Alexander is your guest. Kind of her. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich.
Good afternoon.
And Miss Wynn Alexander.
How do you do?
Good, and yourself?
Pleasure. I'm fine. Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure to ours also. Y'all missed one. I don't know if y'all deliberately missed him or not. Oh, Butterball. I drive my car like I drive my woman hard and fast.
Oh.
Remember that?
How could you miss Butterball?
We didn't miss him. We didn't.
You
look.
You'd have to take a detour to miss Butterball.
Let me say this real fast. Butterball, Jimmy Bishop, Larry Daly,
yeah.
Donnie Brooks, Agent 00 Soul, Mitch Thomas.
Okay.
Pawnee Prince Charlie Jeter. Don't want to leave
Pawnee
him out.
Pawnee Prince Charlie.
Champ Hagan, Steve Bird, who I think came from WRL, if I remember vaguely.
Don't forget about get out of that bed and get that bread.
Oh, yeah.
Sir Lancelot.
No.
Kay?
Kay
Williams. Big Daddy Kay.
Kay Williams.
King of the Blues. And also, let me give another plug to Sir Lancelot, George Johnson Jr., because he was a favorite of my mother's.
Mm-hmm.
Another, by the way, British accent by way of Howard University.
Sir Lancelot.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Listen, Howard University is a fabulous, fabulous school, and both, from what I'm told, both John Bandy and Sir Lancelot had the same drama coach there, and that's where they were helped with their fabulous presentations, shall we call their vocal presentations, which did sound for all the world like a British accent.
But now, you're really into music. Black music especially.
Yes.
You're also into politics extremely well, too, because when I first heard y'all come on, you talked to some events that was happening in the early 60s and the mid-60s.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to ask you this. Your culture is pretty rich in African music. You also use the word cool, too. I like the way you say cool. But, question.
Mm.
When Reggie was interviewing this man, I think you said his name was Clarence?
Pendleton.
Clarence Pendleton.
Yes, a name that will live in infamy.
Chairman of the Civil Rights Commission.
And I know if Reggie interviewed him, he asked him questions that most people missed, and he don't really, he go to the hard points, and the points is really relevant, he does that.
Absolutely.
But now you,
mm?
I'm going to ask you a hard question.
Okay.
You seem to be a lady, you don't seem to be prejudice. You seem to be just a human being just to listen to you talk. And you extracted that the man said that your color was no difference in color. But now, you're pretty infused with my culture. What do you think happened when we was making those great strides and movements? Because you can connect with both sides. Why did the politician make a concerted effort to derail the movement that we had in the 60s and the 70s, in your opinion? Because look like to you, to me, you can get a little more information from both sides because you've been accepted. You definitely accepted on this side. I can listen to you talk. So would you give me your answer to that? What do you think? What do you think was the reason behind why they derailed that movement that we had moving so well?
According to my calculations, as of this moment, and by the way, when I get new data, I reassess it. But I've studied this a great deal because many things happened at WDAS, some of which we haven't talked about here. We were also targeted by the government. And you cannot underestimate the backward, retarded racism of the more fascist aspects of the powers that be that have been at the helm of the United States for quite some time. John Kennedy was a challenge to them. Eleanor Roosevelt was a challenge to them. When you read FBI memoranda from that criminal, J. Edgar Hoover, a man who today would be indicted, he would not be the head of the FBI for 50 and 60 years. That reign of terror would have ended in a jail sentence. He blackmailed public officials. This is illegal. It would not happen today. Yet, at those high circles, it was happening all the time. The FCC was the closest thing other than the IRS that this country had to a Gestapo. They had special treatment for black stations. And one of the things that you see in all of the memos are the words Black Messiah. These folks were viciously, disgustingly afraid of the rise of a Black Messiah, the rise of a Black Messiah. So in a way, maybe what we all were a party to was an accident that wasn't, in other words, our victory was an accident. God's hand was in it. Because when you look at the concerted effort, there are boxes and boxes that J. Edgar Hoover kept on Eleanor Roosevelt. This is one of the most loved women. She is the wife of a revered president, but she's the niece of an even more revered. People love Teddy Roosevelt more than they love Franklin at the time. And yet, blue blood, without question, she did not escape the enemy treatment that was J. Edgar Hoover. And he's just a catchword for what was going on in agency after agency, agencies we don't even know the name of.
There was no level to which he would not stoop. At all the time, hiding his own picadillos.
Oh, please, get the dresses
and
out.
Odd references. But they began the whole business of the eavesdropping and the wiretaps and the microphones and the letters to Coretta King and all manner of
and
things.
And the tapes to Coretta.
And
tapes,
exactly. And he and John Conyers is also another victim. But
that's right.
It was when you see even the redacted transcripts because of freedom of information, there are still some things that will astonish you about their great fear that there would be this individual who would come and the blacks in the nation would rise up and overthrow. And so they had to do everything they could under any circumstance to
now,
keep that from happening.
I'm going to say this, then I'm going to close. It appears that what the man initially said to you, there's no difference in us. It seems that I don't really think there's a difference.
There isn't. There isn't.
But I'm just thinking there must be a group of people must definitely think there's a difference.
Well, the difference is from the neck up. It's what people think and the behaviors that they've been.
Fear.
So it's in his head, more or less.
It's fear. Yeah. It's total, total fear. And then, look, one of the worst people you can meet is a feared person. They're terrible. First of all, they're boring. But in their fear,
but it looked like right
they
now,
will try to harm you.
It seems that there's a little movement right now that somebody's getting over a little at fear. The little at fear, it just appears like that.
I think that fear is at its greatest height. I don't think anybody's more afraid than the Republicans and led by their particular lackeys. They are in absolute abject fear that they will not be able to accomplish what they want, which was world dominance. And they use fear to keep people at arm's length.
But
if I say to you that there is a great threat to your life, I know what it is, and I'm the only one that can prevent it from getting you, so trust me. You, therefore, depended upon me to keep you safe from something that you don't know about, but I told you was a danger to you. That's where we're living at this moment.
Right, but it's no danger really at all.
They made it up.
No danger at all. But it looked like now, Reggie, it looked like the way this political thing is unfolding right now, looked like a large segment of white people losing a little bit of that fear. I'm just looking at the polls of what's going on. You know what I'm saying?
But you can't. This is a beauty contest. There are 360 million people in this country. If you're talking about what has happened with the beauty contest for 20 million people, then you have a survey that is pretty much comparable to what a poll does. So believe me, the American people haven't changed yet.
They haven't changed yet.
There is no indication that they have. These beauty contests, these caucuses, and these primaries are exercises. It's like spring training. You don't know who's going to make the squad, and you don't know what kind of team you're going
to
have.
You know, I agree with you too, Reg. But you know what, too, to the caller, I also feel it could change for the better any moment. I have a CD out called Take Back the Night. And we have to take back this country. There's tons of great people out there. And we all know each other when we see each other. And we all know what we all know. And we're not afraid. And not only that, every resource that we need to make this thing work really well, they're still right here. This thing could work so well if those guys, and I don't know how they got so greedy. Again, they're full of fear, too. I wish they could get enough money. At one point, I was talking with the aide out of Cynthia McKinney's office, John Judge, and he bounced off something I said about, well, don't they have enough money? And then another aide piped up and said, why don't we find out how much money they need to make from the war and just pay it to them up front? And then we don't have to go to Iraq. Just pay them off now.
Miss Wynn, I must say this. I really appreciate talking to you.
My pleasure.
I have to agree with Reggie. I don't think it's money. I think it's in his head. Some of his head. You know
maybe
what I mean?
Right.
I really believe that.
And I'm not so much pessimistic as I am realistic. We have to understand that things are accomplished after a long struggle because they were gotten that way. And it doesn't mean that things may not ultimately modify, even adapt. But let us not become so enthusiastic about what happened in spring training that we predict, you know, a World Series victory, if you know what I'm saying.
I got you. Good talking to you, Reggie.
My pleasure, sir.
Pleasure.
We hesitate. We pause again. We'll be back shortly. Your guest, Wynn Alexander. The caliphate awaits, as does Joey and Tony. A band of troublemakers await to make their comments. And we'll find out what they have to say after this.
Join the Empowerment Zone Thursday, February 28th, 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the African American History Museum for a live Knowledge is Power broadcast.
Be informed ahead of the game. Listen to News Source 900 for a preview of the Philadelphia Tribune newspaper front page stories at 11:45 a.m. Thursdays exclusively on 900 a.m. WURD.
Used to be, Paul was just an average guy.
I work at a grocery store.
Ross Jardine changed that.
I just absorbed it like a sponge. Even in the down market, I can make money. Absolutely.
I'm Ross Jardine. I've taught thousands of people how to make money trading stocks and options. You can get started today with my free Stock Investor Toolkit. In this free investing toolkit, you get my easy-to-use Stock Investor software and my step-by-step instructions.
Call today, 888-655-3294. 888-655-3294.
Identity theft can rob you of your money, your reputation, and the countless hours it takes to restore your good name. That's why LifeLock, the industry leader in proactive identity theft protection, guarantees that if they can't stop it, they'll fix it at their expense. Up to $1 million, and it's just a call away. Call 1-800-690-9737 right now and get LifeLock absolutely free for 30 days. That's 1-800-690-9737. Again, 1-800-690-9737.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can hear 900 AM WURD in crisp, clear, digital quality sound. Visit www.900amwurd.com. WURD, your information station. Committed to solutions.
Thank you.